Chapter 9. Now they had the means of escape. It was tempting to take their chances that very night, but Donal urged caution. So many things had to be right. They needed a cloudy or moonless night. The streets around the castle had to be empty. There must be enough time for them to get safely out of the city before they were all missed. We'll only have one chance, Donal warned them. We mustn't waste it. So they watched and waited, forcing themselves to be patient. And at last, a full week after the 12th night, everything eventually fell into place. It had been a bleak day, and darkness came early, an evening of thick cloud and drifting snowflakes. As black as an Englishman's gut, declared Art Kavanagh as he peeked out into the gloom from the perch of the windowsill. You'll hardly see your hand before your face with the weather that's in it, and everyone away from home early to their firesides. The streets are deserted. And the castle gate? Asked Donal, trying to look over his shoulder. Art looked down. They're closing it now. The sentries are all off on the bridge. He slid down from the windowsill and looked from one person to the other. We'll have no better chance, I'm telling you. Well then, what are we waiting for? Said Hugh. He flung over the chest and pulled up the rope. The others dragged the heavy oak table over to the window, and Art secured the rope to one of the table chairs. Hugh O'Toole jammed a chair under the handle of the door to wedge it shut. In case anyone comes and tries to get in, and we only halfway down the wall, he said. Art tossed the rope out the window. We'll go in order of age, he whispered. You first, Hugh Rowe, then Donal, and Hugh and I will follow. Hugh scrambled onto the windowsill. He looked down at the bridge. He had never appreciated before what a long way down it was. The thin silk rope felt ridiculously weak and flimsy between his hands. For a moment, his heart failed him. Then he thought again of Loch Swilly, of the English soldiers in Donegal Friary, of a wrecked ship and 300 men who should still have been alive. He wriggled backwards through the window, wrapped his legs around the rope, and began the long journey down. It took an eternity. His arms ached, his knees and elbows scraped against the wall. The thin rope cut his hands, but suddenly his feet touched stone and he was standing on the parapet of the bridge. He dropped to the ground and looked up at the tower. It loomed over him, blacker than the darkness of the night. Dia, he thought. Did I really escape from there? As he watched, he saw a dark figure squeeze through the window and begin its own descent. Donal. Hugh fought down the urge to shout and triumph. They were going to make it, all of them. He knew they were. But he must get off the bridge. He was too easy to see. Feeling his way around cautiously, he edged along the wall to the safety of the street. There was not a sound from the castle. It was almost too easy. His mind raced, running ahead of him to Glenamore, boasting to Fiach MacHugh of their high deeds and daring escape. Then, just as he stepped off the bridge, a shadow loomed out of the darkness at his side. Before he could make a sound, a strong arm flung him to the ground, and a hand was put over his mouth. He struggled, a face bent down over him, and a voice whispered in his ear. Hold your nose! I'm a friend! Cormac O'Hanley, kin of Fergus O'Farrell of Longford. O'Farrell's man! Hugh could have wept with relief. This must be the guide that Dick Weston had promised them. He let himself go limp, and after a moment, the hand was taken from his mouth. Hugh Rowe Donal, he whispered, feeling extremely foolish. My sorrow, Hugh Rowe. It's no wish I had to scare you, but I dared not let you call out. And you the wise one, Hugh scrambled to his feet. I'll warn the others as they come down the bridge. Before long, all four of them were crouched safely with their guide behind the wall of the moat. We must not waste time, whispered Corbuck. They'll be shutting the city gate soon. He reached inside his cloak. Here, I have swords for you. And this also. O'Farrell said you'd be needing it. He put something into Hugh's hands, something long and smooth and wooden. Hugh did not need to ask what it was. Weston had remembered. With the wood in his hands and a sword between his belt, he crept back across the bridge. His heart thumped as he approached the great door. There was a ring, just as Weston had described it. It would only take a moment to secure it. But Hugh's ears strained in the darkness. Was that a shout? Had they been missed already? At any moment the door might fly open and spew men onto the bridge with pikes and guns, and himself alone here. Gritting his teeth, Hugh lifted the wood and drove it into the iron ring. It fitted as smoothly as a hand going into a glove. Not a hair's breadth to spare. Hugh's confidence soared. Swiftly, he eased the pole through till a good half of its length was wedged across the door. Then, hugging his triumph, he ran back to his companions. "Did you wedge it in good and tight now?" whispered Cormac. "As tight as I could. They'll not shake it loose." "Good man. Then let's get going." With Cormac leading the way and Art Kavanagh covering the back, the young men set off through the silent streets. Hugh had to fight back the urge to keep glancing over his shoulder. How long before their flight was discovered and the shouts of the garrison brought someone from outside? And what if the city gate was closed? Or if somebody challenged them? Hugh slipped a hand inside his cloak to touch his sword and tried to pretend confident. By the wall of St. Werburgh's Church, Cormac halted his little band. "We'll not all attempt the gate together," he said. "Hugh Rowe and I will go first. Then you follow us a few moments after." He looked at Hugh. "Are you ready?" Hugh nodded. He felt anything but ready, but there was no use putting it off. By the dim glow of the street lanterns, he looked towards the gate and the little bridge across the puddle. The wall here was an extension of the castle wall. To the east, rising above the church, he could see the massive bulk of Birmingham Tower. He imagined eyes watching him from its window, muskets trained on his back as he crossed the bridge. "Patrick, defend me," he prayed, and gritted his teeth, marching after Cormac. As if in answer to his prayer, a sudden snowstorm swirled around his ears. By the time he reached the gate, he could barely see Cormac, 3 steps in front of him. They passed unchallenged. The sentries, huddled in their cloaks, hardly spared them a glance, and a few people who were passing had their heads down and were too concentrated on hurrying home to notice the 2 cloaked figures. Hugh chuckled silently as he offered up his thanks. However much the English might to try and forbid the wearing of it, an Irish mantle was a very good garment on a winter's night, even in Dublin. Once clear of the bridge, Cormac led them at a purposeful but unhurried pace through the outlying suburbs. The streets were empty, but they walked in silence. Hugh's body was still tense, against half expecting a challenge. He kept his right hand on the hilt of his sword and guessed that Art was doing the same. And then, quite suddenly it seemed, the last of the houses was behind them, and they were in the open countryside. They walked on for a while, and then Cormac stopped and pointed in the distance. "Look," he said, "the Wicklow Mountains." Hugh followed his gaze. The snow clouds that had covered their escape were starting to break up. He could see trees and grassland, the Irish countryside stretching away before him in the black slopes of Slieve Row. He sucked in a lungful of cold, sweet air. He wanted to shout and dance, to seize fistfuls of turf and throw them into the wind. He was free! No more locked doors or grey walls. He could run as far as he wanted in any direction, with nothing to stop him. By morning, the euphoria had faded. They had walked all night, climbing higher and higher into the mountains, and Hugh was exhausted. 3 years in prison had hardly been the best training for such a journey. Worse still, his shoes were coming apart. They were thin English shoes, never intended for outdoor use, and his feet were bruised and blistered. He plodded grimly after the others, each step an increasing agony, praying for sleep and daylight and the safety of Ballinacore, Fiach MacHugh's stronghold in Glenamour. Towards dawn, Cormac halted the party for a brief rest in the shelter of the woods. The clouds returned, this time bringing rain, and everyone was cold, wet and hungry. "How much further?" grumbled Art, flopping onto the wet grass. Only an hour or so. We're near Glendalough. You would see the tower from here and the clouds not hiding it." "An hour, is it? Dear, but I'll be glad to see Ballincore." Donal also dropped to the ground and began to massage his aching calf muscles. "I have a fierce hunger on me, and I'll say this for Fiach MacHugh. He keeps a grand table." "Aye, he does that," agreed Hugh O'Toole. "And his wife, my sister Roche, the best brewer of ale in this side of the Boyne. It'll be lashings and leaving for all tonight, I'm thinking." Lashings and leavings. Hugh tried to imagine himself snug and warm in Fiach's hall, with a mug of ale in his hand and a bowl of broth in front of him. But the reality just kept on intruding. Before he could enjoy the hospitality, Somehow, he had to get himself there, and for the life of him, he couldn't see how his feet were going to carry him. Perhaps when I've rested a bit, he thought. He stretched out on the soggy ground, and the relief was almost instantaneous. I wouldn't sleep, he promised himself. I'll just lie here till I get my strength back. But his eyes ached. In the end, he had to close them. And suddenly Cormac's voice jolted him out of a dream, urging them all to their feet again. He opened his eyes. It was full daylight now. Though the clouds made it difficult to tell, and the rain was coming down even more heavy than ever, he shivered and pulled his cloak around him. Cormac had the truth of it. They had to keep moving. The English would be right behind them, looking through the countryside. But, he closed his eyes again. Oh, God, just a few more moments, a few precious seconds before the needed walk. He felt a hand shaking him by the shoulder. Hugh, said Donald's voice. Hugh, get up. We have to be going. Swaying like a drunk, he dragged himself to his feet. Donald stared at him, worried. Are you all right? He nodded. But just when he tried to take a step, it was like he was walking on needles. Dia! Exclaimed Donal. What's on you, Hero? Are you sick? He shook his head. My feet! Donal lowered himself to the ground and pulled off the shoes. Holy Mother of God, why didn't you tell us? He lifted his voice. Cormac, come here till you see this! Their guide turned and came hurrying back. He looked down at his own feet, blistered and bruised, bleeding from scratches. Panic seized him. He couldn't possibly walk as far as Glenmore in this condition. What in the world was he going to do? He looked helplessly at his friends. Donal and Cormac looked at each other. We'll bandage them, suggested Donal. It might help. Cormac pushed his cloak back and ripped off one of his shirt sleeves. Here, use this. Donal tore the linen into strips and he and Cormac set about bandaging Hugh's feet. Hugh felt very foolish. It's my own shirt you should be using, he protested. But Cormac pretended not to hear. There now, he said, when at last they were finished. Let's have you up and see if you can walk again. They helped him to his feet, with his arms around his shoulders, set off again. For a while, Hugh managed to ignore the pain, but it got worse and worse. Before long, they had to stop and let him rest again. This is hopeless, he gasped as they lowered him to the ground. You'll have to leave me here. We'll do no such thing, retorted Donal. Are we Saxons to be turning our back on one of our own? He looked at his companions. We'll carry him if we have to, won't we, lads? We will, they agreed. But Hugh could see how worried Cormac looked. Time was slipping away, and time was the only thing they did not have. Fitzwilliam would be searching all over the mountains by now. How would he live with himself if they all got caught because of him? Donal had already cheated off freedom once. You'll not carry me, he said. I'll not let you. Leave me here in the shelter of these trees, and send someone back for me when you reach Ballincore. They looked at each other with doubt. It might be the safest, admitted Cormac. For Hugh, as well as us. There's a rocky road ahead of us yet. I'll stay with him, said Donal. You will not, said Hugh. Ah, try stop me. The two boys glared at each other. Will you hold your row, the pair of you, broke in Cormac. Haven't I better plan entirely? We're only a mile or so from Castle Kevin, my brother's stronghold. I can be there and back while a cat would be licking his paws and fetch help for Hugh, while the rest of you head on to Glenmalure. They all turned to look at him. I know it's not as safe as Ballincore, he said, but Phelan will see us right. He promised to help us any time we asked for it. So he did, agreed Hugh, and Phelan O'Toole is a man of his word. Donal still didn't look happy. I don't like to split up the group. Maybe we should all make for Castle Kevin. Hugh shook his head. No, I'm not giving Phelan any more trouble than I have to. And somebody should stay to protect you, persisted Donal. Am I a child? I'll manage fine. With one man hiding among these trees will be harder to spot than a whole group. Will you go now? Every minute you stand here, doesn't it bring the English closer? For a moment, Donal looked as though he was going to argue. But at last, he hunched his shoulders and let out a sigh. He leaned down and grabbed Hugh's hand. God go with you, Hugh. We'll celebrate together at Rathmullen. We will, and one with us. God speed the journey, Donal.